T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good mountain. Wow, blow the whistle. Wow, how do you start an hour like that?
It was all Gail's fault. She threw you right off with the...
I have you fired up, Joe.
Jerking around too much in the break right there. Jerking around way too much in the break. All right. Good morning and welcome to 95.7 The Game. Alongside the Pro Bowler, Lorenzo Neal, the always dapper Dan Dibley, I'm Joe Fortenball. Great to have you in. We've got $1,000 to give away in a moment. Another $1,000 to give away at 8. Tickets to give away at 8:45. And mark it down. 8:15 this morning, the head coach Jack Del Rio will join us on the program to talk all things silver and black. Now, let's begin with some money. It's time for the 4K Day Cash Contest. This is your chance to win $1,000. Text the code word DRINK to 72881. DRINK to 72881. Message and data rates apply. Bochy and Dave Righetti get run from last night's game against Pittsburgh. The latest on Sonny Gray with John Morosi in just a few moments. But for right now, here's Dibs with your update.
Top story, Joe, is the NBA and Derrick Rose committing to the Cavaliers. The former Bull and Nick reportedly will sign a one-year, $2.1 million deal. This came first from The Vertical. This is all amid rumors that Kyrie Irving wants to be traded from Cleveland. The landscape of the NBA is changing rapidly. Stay tuned to 95.7 The Game for all the developments surrounding the NBA offseason. Story number two, forgettable game for the Giants against Pittsburgh.
Hit well to left. Gorky Hernandez at the wall, and it's gone.
Dwayne Kuiper, NBC Sports Bay Area. One of two three-run homers hit by the Pirates in the 10-3 victory. Madison Bumgarner gets the start tonight. His third start since recovering from that dirt bike accident in April in Colorado. Story number three, Bob Melvin still on career win 999. The A's lose in Toronto. They muster only two hits, one of them a Matt Chapman home run. Ryan Healy drove in the other run of the ballgame. Sonny Gray gets the start this afternoon. 3:15, your dugout show right here on 95.7 The Game. The update brought to you by Capital Oak Tree Mazda. You see it everywhere. The DGDG.com yellow license plate. So, where will you see it next? Check us out at DGDG.com. I'm Dan Dibley. On your home of the NBA champion Golden State Warriors, it's 95.7 The Game.
Did you say the Athletics muster only two hits?
I believe I said that, yeah.
Not to be confused with Buster Only, Muster Only.
Oh, wow. Let me just...
I just heard that, and I thought it was... It had to be acknowledged.
The A's Buster Only two hits. I should have gone with it. I'm more of a Morosi man myself.
That's hot content right there.
Only's had a nice little career, but it all goes through Morosi.
Speaking of which, MLB Insider for both Fox Sports and the MLB Network. Follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. It's a great John Morosi with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. John, we need a way to rhyme your name so we can get it into the update. Any suggestions for us since we're lazy and probably won't be putting in the effort?
Oh, boy. Well, I can tell you this much, that if you go to the Italian translation of my name, so Morosi, if you were going to say loro sono Morosi, meaning they are Morosi, that actually means either they are in debt, or if you say loro sono amorosi, it means they are in love. So you're either in debt or you're in love. If your last name is Morosi, I guess in my case, it's probably both.
Incredible.
Sundays during the NFL season, I find myself in Morosi quite a bit, and I'm certainly not in love with anything that's taking place.
Morosi, you like to stay nice and cozy with the little ladies, huh?
Here we go.
Well done. Well done.
All right. John Morosi with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Let's get down to business, and let's begin with Sonny Gray. At this point, you've got to figure. Steven Strasburg's banged up in Washington. The Dodgers are curious as to what's going to happen with Clayton Kershaw and his injury. Houston could need starting pitching. The Yankees could need starting pitching. Are we going to see Sonny pitch today for the A's? And how much longer is this going to go on before a deal inevitably gets done? Take us through the Sonny Gray trade talks.
Right. I do think that at the moment, at least, the odds are in favor of Gray pitching tonight. and not being traded before then. I checked on this yesterday with a couple different sources, was told that there was nothing really close or imminent right now on Sonny Gray. But the interest, as you point out, is widespread, and it is increasing. It's increasing because of exactly what you're talking about. It's increasing because of the Kershaw injury, even Brandon McCarthy going on the DL there for the Dodgers. It's increasing because of the developments there in Washington with Steven Strasburg. And notably, the Nationals and A's. I had lost track somehow at the number of times they've had deals. But the Nationals and A's have reached 11 trades since December of 2010. 11 trades in less than 7 years. Remarkable. And so they've continued talking even since the Mets and Doolittle trade because – frankly, now the Nationals' needs have changed, where they perhaps need one more starting pitcher. So stay tuned there to that possibility. The Cubs, the Yankees, notably, a big back page in the New York Post today with Sonny Gray's picture on it, talking about the Yankees' interest in him. So there's a lot there, and I think Sonny Gray right now, tonight, he'll be probably the most closely watched man in the major leagues.
We'll have to check back with you to see what their record is in those 11 trades, if the A's are 6-4-1 or what the what the breakdown is on who got the better of those.
We have the official scoring on that one. There's always open to interpretation, but yes, let's get the official scoring marker out.
Remarkable that it's been 11 deals. Do you see any other of the Athletics possibly being moved, maybe a package deal where Yonder Alonso goes with Sonny Gray or perhaps Jed Lowry?
Right now, guys, I'm hearing that there's more interest in Jed Lowry than Yonder Alonso. Alonso hasn't been quite as powerful in the last month or so, last couple weeks at least, since the All-Star break. But the interest is, I think, higher in Lowry because of the positional versatility. I look at a team like Cleveland. They could really use one more piece. I look at Milwaukee. I think Cleveland and Milwaukee are two teams to watch there for Jed Lowry. But Alonso, it's been oddly quiet. They, of course, the Yankees made the move with the corner infielder to get Frazier moving Headley across the diamond. So it appears they're set. And then teams like the Angels and Mariners, both of whom could really upgrade there at first base, haven't really been headlong into that marketplace. So it's been oddly quiet on Alonso. That's not to say that it can't happen because, of course, he is a free agent after the season is over and likely to obviously find bigger riches elsewhere. In the wintertime, so the mechanics of a trade are there. But again, guys, it's sort of mystifying, so not a ton of interest in Alonso right now. And Lowry, again, I believe Cleveland, Milwaukee, two of the possible fits there for him.
Across the Bay, San Francisco Giants, a team that's had a lot of success over the years. This year seems to be a down year and continues to spiral out of control. Do they have any trade asset pieces that would be good for them or behoove them to try to move to get something? Or do you think this team should just stay put?
Great question, because they're stuck. They're stuck. They have a lot of larger contracts on the books that aren't performing all that well. And you've got players like Nunez, of course, he's missing time with injury. I think there's a decent chance he's moved. But aside from him, it could be a pretty quiet deadline for the Giants. Matt Cain, of course, his contract expiring after this year, you would have thought that he might be able to build his value back and be a useful back-end starter just to get some innings eaten up here in the coming weeks. But that was a tough outing for him yesterday. So really, you look across the board, and perhaps there's some interest in the Jeff Samardzija or Matt Moore. But because they're both under control for next year, and because there's such uncertainty for the Giants about what their rotation is going to look like, I think it's going to be difficult for Bobby Evans to find a good fit for either Samardzija or Moore. And again, Cueto, his opt-out really complicates matters. So, again, it's not to say that it can't happen, because certainly it can. And we know the Astros have been watching the Giants pitching because they've been watching everybody. And perhaps if you are a Giants fan that wants to see a trade happen, I would say you're rooting for a Sonny Gray deal to happen quickly, and then for Gray to be off the board, and for the Rangers to play well, which then removes Darvish from consideration potentially, and then that makes Samardzija and Moore all the more appealing. I still think you look at Moore, the way the ball comes out of his hand when he pitches well as he did last time out, he's still a really good pitcher. He just really struggled this year. So I think Matt Moore is a very intriguing name for the industry, even though the ERA is up there close to 6. He can still throw pitches at an elite level, I believe, at least at times. And so I think teams may still want to take a chance on him.
John Morosi with Joe Lowndes on 95.7 The Game. The word came out over the weekend that ownership has let the Giant front office know they want to contend in 2018. Is this the right move, John? Is this the right move? Because obviously everyone wants to contend, but you make a poor assessment of where you're at. You make a couple bad decisions based on that. That could saddle you down for a long time with some tricky contracts that put your team in a very, very perilous situation.
Well, ask the Detroit Tigers right now. Ask the Tigers, ask the Phillies a few years ago what that's like when you wait a little too long. And I do think it's important. I want to make this point on the to support the Giants front office a bit, is that during the wintertime, no one in the industry was coming up to me at the winter meetings and saying, oh, my goodness, what are the Giants doing? They need to tear this thing down, because they were weeks removed from nearly pushing the Cubs to a fifth game. So I think it's important to say that really the industry's opinion was never that oh, this team is getting so old so fast, they've got to tear it down right now. That was not the sentiment, and I think it's important to keep that in mind. So this is really their first opportunity to make these types of moves, and it's just the way the roster looks right now. It's hard to see how practical that's going to be. Now, the decision of wanting to contend in 2018, in a vacuum, it's reasonable, because you could say, listen, what are the odds of us having a poor season in back-to-back years after such a good one in 2016, where we competed right there with the World Series champions up until the very last moments of Game 4? And that's very, very valid and very legitimate. But I think in baseball, it's important to note, guys, as you're pointing out right now, that teams can get very old very fast in this game. And once they do, there is no unwinding the watch and the clock and getting that time back. Because once it happens usually definitively and permanently. So for the Giants to address this, I agree that there's probably some steps that have to be taken to make this a contending team in 2018. But it's a tough division. You've got the Dodgers at the height of their powers, at least in recent years. And then you've got two better-than-expected teams that may well play in the wild card game in Arizona and Colorado. So where are the wins going to be? Where are the wins and where are the easy series going to be coming up here in the National League West? So I think if you take everything into consideration, I would say probably you reluctantly do have to have a bit of a rebuild. But I guess I also understand why the front office is making the decision that they are, based on where this team was effectively 12 months ago when they were the best team in the National League entering the All-Star break.
The team signed Pablo Sandoval to a minor league deal. He's had 3 games in single A. He's expected into triple A. If he comes up in September, is this basically just a marketing move, or have you heard from scouts that he has anything left in his tank?
Well, we'll see. I think it's a very fair question that you're asking, because he really did not play well in Boston at all. Now, Boston's a hard place to play, and perhaps – getting back to a comfortable place will put Pablo back in a good headspace where he can perform again. And if that's the case, the Giants can find out in the coming months. If he can't, then really there's really nothing lost here, because they're just paying at the minimum now anyway. So I think it's a good plan from the standpoint of his productivity to see what he can do. It's a good plan from a baseball standpoint. It's a good plan from a business standpoint. We know how popular he is. We know we'll see the Panda hats come out when he gets back to AT&T. That's all great. This is all good, clean fun, and that's how you run business in American sports. So that's all fine. But at some point in time, he's going to have to produce, and the Giants need answers at third base. I don't think he'll be the answer at third base for 2018. I'd be surprised if he is. But at this point in time, where the Giants are in the standings, there is no harm in trying.
He's an MLB insider for both Fox Sports and the MLB Network. Follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. It's John Morosi with Joe Lowndes on 95.7 The Game. John, thank you so much for your time as always. Best of luck getting some sleep this week. We look forward to doing it again soon.
Yeah, my pleasure. This is like my Christmas coming up here for a whole week. I love it. But it is, as you point out, a very exhausting one. So I shall do my best to get a little bit of sleep.
See you, John. Thanks again.
Take care. Thanks so much, guys.
Bochy and Rigetti both run in last night's game.
Crazy. Fourth time Rigetti's been run as a coach in his stead as either a manager or stepping in. That was an odd scene. Ron Wotus would have been the next one to go out.
You think Bochy just wanted to grab some dinner and get home early?
I think it's one of those things where maybe he just wanted to go have a little wine back in his office and watch the game on TV. Enough is enough. That game was ugly early. They're getting squeezed by the ump. You find yourself down 6-0 in the second, and you're already 24 games below 500. You can't fault the skipper for wanting to just take a powder.
He knew it was over.
Yeah, without
a doubt. What do you do?
What gives you that impression? What do you mean it's over, down 6-0?
Second inning already. It was over.
You see them in a situation where they're down 2 runs by the sixth. I've gotten to the point where I realize they're not coming back from this.
No.
And I'm talking 2 runs. You see 6 runs, you are done. You can check out. They're not coming back. And they got no firepower on this team whatsoever.
And you don't think the players know it's over by then too, Joe? They know. I've been on some sorry teams, guys. I told you when I was in Cincinnati, and you out there just fighting to hold onto your butt. You know that you're not winning that game. You're already down by 14, and it's the first quarter. You look up, and you look on the sideline, and you see guys, and you watch their demeanor, and you know in your head it's over, and you just go out there and you say, I'm just going to fight, continue to fight. This team, they know it. You see Johnny Cueto, the way he's pitching. You see the way the guys are pitching. Things aren't going their way. It's over. It's just an over. This is a throwaway year.
One of the sources for this team's great strength over the last few years has become its ultimate weakness, and there's nothing they can do about it. It's the ballpark. The ballpark attracts a ton of people. The ballpark plays a huge role in sellouts, in revenue. The ballpark is widely regarded one of the best in the business. I don't disagree with any of that. It's a great place to see a game. Beautiful views. The upper deck seats are better than any upper deck seats you'll find anywhere in professional sports. But they can't hit home runs in this park, and that is killing them with the way baseball is played in the year 2017. Brandon Crawford was at a kids youth baseball camp like last Friday, I believe it was. And he was asked a lot of questions from the kids, and he was talking about, you know, how big are major league fields? And quote, they vary in size. Ours is one of the bigger ones, 421 feet to right center, which should be changed, Crawford said. I was at that game against Cleveland last Monday when he put one right off the top of the wall in right center. This is a left-handed bat that comes nowhere near the power numbers you would expect from a left-handed bat because of the park. Now, he's struggling this year in general, but go through the top home run hitting teams. What do they have in common? Houston, number one, playoff team. Texas, number two, in the thick of it. Milwaukee, number three, led the Central for a while, still in it. Dodgers, number four, dominating. Mets, number five, bums. Washington, number six, leading the division. Tampa Bay, number seven, in the thick of it. Yankees, number eight, in the thick of it. Baltimore, number nine, nothing. Oakland, number 10, struggling. Teams that hit home runs in this day and age find themselves in serious contention. That's not the be-all, end-all stat, but this is the day and age. Baseball isn't interested in 300 hitters, right? Eduardo Nunez has hit 300 how many years in a row? He's Mr. Tradable. No one cares. No one wants a 300 hitter. What they want are power guys like Chris Davis, who might hit 227, but he's going to give you 40 bombs. That's what baseball is moving towards. Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton. It's all about the strikeout, the walk, and the home run. Those are your three absolutes. That's it. No one's looking to get on base, bunt a guy over, knock him around. This is the way baseball is played now. You go to the teams at the bottom of the list in home runs. San Francisco, nothing. Pittsburgh, they're in contention. Phillies, second or the worst team in MLB. Boston's in there. They're leading the division. But you got Atlanta, the White Sox, the Angels, on and on. You've got to be able to hit home runs. This team can't hit home runs for anything this year at that park. The park's killing them.
And here's the thing, though. To the flip side of that, though, Joe, you have 50 games, in 100 and whatever many games it is season, you play 80 or whatever at home. So it's not that everyone else is hitting home runs in their park either. They're not playing great baseball. So they're losing games, even though they're playing at home, then just go win. And they're not even doing that. So I understand they need to hit home runs. Yes, you need to have power, and it's about strikeout and that. But at the same sense, you got to find a way to get wins too.
Do you think this is rock bottom for this franchise? What we're seeing this year? A lot of people understand, you know what? Chalk it up. It happens. I'm one of those people. Big deal. It's one bad year compared to a lot of glory and a lot of parades you've been able to enjoy for a good duration of time. But is this rock bottom, or is this thing going to get worse, Dibs?
I think this is about it. It's about as bottom as you can get. They're on pace to lose, 103, 104 games right now? It's a miserable season. You haven't had this many losses since you came out here from New York. So, yes, I think this is going to be rock bottom. Now, can you turn it around and be a contender next year, keeping 20 of these 25 players? I don't think so, unless you bring in really big bats to fill the hole at third base, left field, center field. I know you're stuck with your right fielder for another season, but you're going to need some more power from the power spots. And I would argue that, you know, Brandon Crawford is not right because the park is the park, and you have all these guys invested in the pitching. Madison Bumgarner is going to be a $100 to $200 million guy. Johnny Cueto is over $100 million. Samardzija is 95. Kane's getting $21 million a year. You're built on pitching and defense. You have elite defense. Your pitching hasn't been very good. You can survive in that park winning games 3-2 if your power guys produce a little bit. And that's Crawford, that's Belt. Pence has done nothing. So as much as you can look at the ballpark is what it's going to be. You've won three titles there. The fact that the park was too big wasn't a problem in 10, 12, or 14, was it?
Right. But were they power guys back then? Or did they lean on great pitching and a team effort? Top to bottom in those playoff runs, they got efforts out of everybody.
Right.
Everybody showed up for that. This year, nobody's showing up. And what happens when your star pitching takes a step back? Someone else has got to step up. At some point, the highlight for this team has been put on the bats, and you're realizing just how bad they are. Defensively, they're not one of the best in the business this year like they used to be. And from a pitching standpoint, they're not one of the best in the business like they used to be. So then you turn your attention to the bats. All right, well, maybe this is a season where the bats bail them.
No.
So not only do they not bail them out, they never come through. I mean, this is, like I said, the other night, I think it was the Padre game on Sunday. It was like 5-3 going to the seventh. It's like they have nine outs to go. They can't score two runs. Like, that's the mindset I have with them.
Right.
And this isn't to try to take a shot at them. No. It's just what they've shown this year.
And I don't think
nine outs, they cannot generate two runs.
And I don't think it's rock bottom. When you say rock bottom, are they going to lose 100 games next year? No. But the course that this team is choosing to take, of saying they're going to stay put and they're going to still compete, that's foolish. It's absolutely foolish. And you say that, hey, it's just a down year. We're going to get better. We're not going to make any big trades. We're not going to make any splash. We'll get a hitter for third base. But we're going to, after that, the whole team, pretty much these guys are coming back. They won't be at rock bottom. They won't lose maybe this many games next year, but they won't contend.
Yeah, but for you to think 100 losses is rock bottom, mm-hmm. What happens if they come back next year and they miss the playoffs?
Exactly.
By five games. Say next year they go 81-81. Right? That's not an improvement. This team is World Series contention or bust. So if you lose 100 games this year and you lose 89 games next season, that's not an improvement. When I mean rock bottom, I mean you're about to fall from grace and become a bottom dweller for the foreseeable future. I'm not talking about this day in history is the farthest below 500 they'll be, and then they'll climb a little bit back and next year they'll be a little bit better. When I say rock bottom, I'm talking about a team that just won three World Series. Now it's all over. And for the next few years, you are going to be on the slow, steady decline until you figure out you need to rebuild. I think the biggest mistake they're making is evaluating themselves as a team that can contend next year.
I agree.
Going into this deadline saying, we're a couple tweaks away. What are the tweaks? Bumgarner's has already peaked in his regular season. He'll never put up a better regular season than what you've already seen. Postseason dominance, one of the best we've ever seen. But from a regular season perspective, what is out there to tell you that at some point he's going to go 22-3 with a 1.89 ERA? He doesn't have that in him. Postseason, he does. Regular season, he doesn't. So what else is there? Cueto's not getting any better. Cueto doesn't even want to be here. He wants the money. That's the difference. If he opts in, it's not because he loves San Francisco. He's already made it clear. He doesn't like the locker room, and he wants to finish his career in the American League. If he stays, he's staying for the money. It's staying for the financial reasons. Hunter Pence, he's not getting younger. Belt, you've already seen his max. Crawford, you've seen his max. Joe Panik, maybe there's something there, but it's never going to be power. Third base is a hole. And Arroyo getting injured and losing his entire season, that's going to hurt you in development. What are you going to do about left field? And while Span has a little bit of power, that's not your answer in center. You get serious problems. Plus, what do you have in the bullpen? It's not like Melanson's 26 years old.
Right.
You got nothing.
Your aging team, you're not going to, this team, if they don't make a major overhaul, they're going to continue to tank, Dibs, because it's you're wanting these older guys and guys to step up and turn back the clock. They can do it on every, not every night, You can see great players show you signs of greatness and go out one night and go 3 for 3 or four and have that great night. But when you start in 30s and stuff and you see where these Buster and all these guys getting older, you're trying to save them. They're not going to be able to stay consistent. It's just a matter of life.
I think the biggest thing they're facing is that so many of these guys are on the hook for such big deals that to totally blow the thing up, Joe, would take too much to do at the deadline. You figure bring all these guys back one more time. You're 1 year closer to the end of Samardzija. Kane will be done, et cetera, et cetera. Pence will be close to done. If you can't do it next year, then you can completely wipe the slate clean.
Scott Bear, Raider camp underway. We're going to talk with Jack Del Rio at 8:15, but to get ready for that, let's have a little silver and black conversation with old Scotty boy. What do you guys say? That's coming up next. Jolo and Dibs with the latest on Gary and Conley, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe, Lo, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Look no further than the following piece of information. If you've ever wondered why Las Vegas is filled with tall, beautiful, glistening, gleaming properties, why they comp you dinners and lunches and breakfasts and bottle service at the pools and the clubs. Yesterday, at the South Point Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, which is just off the strip to the south end on your way towards Henderson, Nevada, an individual walked in to the sports book and put $35,000 on Conor McGregor to knock out Floyd Mayweather at a price of 6-1. Should Conor McGregor knock out Floyd Mayweather, something that's never happened to Floyd Mayweather at the hands of a boxing opponent, let alone whatever this is, that individual would win $210,000. That is why there are glistening casinos in Las Vegas. Because buffoons with too much money and not enough sense go walking into casinos to bet $35,000 on guys like Conor McGregor. Insane. Absolutely insane to think that that's reasonable. Someone followed that up a few minutes later with a $15,000 bet on Conor McGregor. The money keeps pouring in on this guy for some reason.
He could catch him, Joe. He could really hurt him if he catches him.
Yeah. I mean, so could Pacquiao and Marcos Maidana twice and Andre Berto, Shane Mosley and Oscar De La Hoya and Ricky Hatton. Remember what would have happened if Ricky Hatton caught Floyd Mayweather? Instead, Hatton almost ended up dead.
Yeah.
Whew. This is just fascinating stuff. All right. He's the Oakland Raider insider for NBC Sports Bay Area. Follow him on Twitter at BearNBCS. It's Scott Bear with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7. The Game. Scott, good morning and thank you for your time. Let's jump right into it because this is the question that all Raider fans continue to ask. What's the latest on first round pick Gary and Conley?
Well, in terms of his legal status, the investigation regarding a sexual assault allegation is still ongoing. How much longer it's going to go, nobody really knows, but they're obviously going to do their due diligence, and they don't care when Raiders training camp starts. So I think ideally this thing would have been wrapped up by now from Gary on's perspective, from the Raiders' perspective. That would make doing a rookie deal, as they are these days, pretty much a slam dunk, but that's not exactly where we are right now. That could be where we are by Friday. And really, it's just a matter of finding out exactly if the Raiders want some stipulations in his deal regarding this legal status, if they're satisfied with a standard rookie deal, which does come with some standard language regarding suspensions, or if he can't play, that they can recoup some guarantees and some signing bonus, things like that. But maybe I'll be surprised by Friday or Saturday, and this thing still won't be done, and we'll be in a holdout sort of situation. But that's not where I'm at right now.
What about the status of Obi Melifonwu and his ability to get into camp on time? And for both players, Scott, how much does them missing these early days hurt them when it comes time to the regular season?
You know, with Obi, I keep hearing that it's not going to be a big issue or a big problem. But at the same time, you can hear that. And like the second part of your question, Dan, is that, these are just kind of pre-camp workouts, and I don't think it's the end of the world if they miss them. But at the same time, if you're a rookie that is expected to come in and make some sort of an instant impact, you would think that every practice is crucial. And I do think that that is the case. You know, you don't want these things to be prolonged. I still don't think that it's going to be. And, you know, ultimately, I still think that Friday is sort of a time that they really need to be there, because Saturday they start real full squad practices, and then it's only a matter of days before they get in pads, and they need the same type of ramp up that all these other players get. So just in terms of physically being able to hit and stuff like that. So I do think that it's important that they get in and get active quickly. I'm sure that they want to do that. The Raiders want it. It just hasn't worked out with the exact timing maybe that fans would have liked.
So this week is pretty much where the guys are in shells and in helmets, and they're going through the different drills. So the main thing for the rookies and the younger players, the first-year players that come in as well, is to get the timing, making sure they're getting a lot of reps, because when the vets come, reps will be at a minimum. So with that right. being said, these two rookies that are holding out, do you think a lot of it is due to the fact that they do look at the Raiders roster in the secondary and the safety and the cornerback and say, and their agents are saying, these guys probably will play and probably get a lot of playing time. So it behooves us to make sure we have the incentives and likely not to be earned incentives because of the play time, you think, a little bit, because they know the Raiders secondary is hurting, that they're going to probably get playing time like you alluded to?
You know, I wouldn't necessarily call them holdouts at this stage. And two, these rookie contracts are so well slotted that there isn't a lot of wiggle room, especially for any pick, but especially for a second round pick in terms of being able to negotiate, certain aspects. If you guys recall last year with the Joey Bosa situation with the Chargers, a lot of that was about offset language, and that's about the only thing that you can really kind of dive into and kind of stick your, draw a line in the sand. So I don't think it's that. Sometimes it's just a matter of getting the right people on the phone at the right time. But again, that may be a statement for last week as opposed to this week. Again, everything I've heard is that the Raiders aren't terribly concerned about it. But, as we move forward, maybe that would increase.
Raiders insider Scott Baer with Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Fortunate for the Raiders, there aren't a whole lot of training camp battles set to take place this summer. It's a team with a lot of talent and a lot of talent that's already slated at starting positions, but there are still a few positions up in the air. Let's begin with right tackle. Do you see Marshall Newhouse winning the right tackle starting job?
I definitely think that Austin Howard is going to try to push him. Vidal Alexander is going to throw his gauntlet in the ring, and so I think Marshall Newhouse is the leader in the clubhouse. He missed some time with injury there during the offseason program, but I think that ultimately, Joe, that what you were saying is probably what they hope happens. I think maybe if Austin could be kind of a swing tackle, they have David Sharp there. This offensive line is incredibly deep, but Austin Howard is not going to lie down. He wants to start. He's been a starter but his entire career, really, whether it's due to injuries or good play, and he's not going to take this lying down. So I do think that right tackle is going to be an interesting battle moving forward. But as Jack Del Rio has said in the past, that Marshall Newhouse is in pole position.
What about the third wide receiver position? Seth Roberts has 2 years under his belt with Derek Carr, but Cordarrelle Patterson was brought in from Minnesota. Guy can fly, but he has trouble running routes consistently. How do you see that one shaking down?
I think Seth is going to be the number three guy, especially as a slot receiver. The Raiders really like what Seth Roberts does. I know that fans, he can drive them nuts because he'll have a huge clutch touchdown catch 1 minute and then drop a third down pass the next. And that's obviously frustrating, but I think that they see a guy with great potential to be a real kind of calming influence in that slot spot. Derek really likes him, and I would anticipate him just by nature of the number three guy generally being that slot guy that he's going to have a chance, or he's not going to have a chance, that he will be the number three guy. Now, in terms of what Patterson does on offense, if you look at his numbers from Minnesota, not that great. Especially with the yards per catch, which hover around 10, and that doesn't really match with the type of speed that he has, So I think ultimately, and this is just me projecting here, I think that he's going to have a greater role in this offense, and even if he can come in and stretch the field somewhat with the speed, or be that kind of Andre Holmes guy who can kind of come in and make a couple big catches, I think that's going to be important. And also in Minnesota, they did a lot of kind of opportunities to get him in space and let him use his speed. I think maybe they could have him go downfield a bit more. That stuff will get worked out. All I know is that during the offseason program, I'm not sure what my expectation for Patterson was, but I thought he was really good offensively during that stretch in terms of making catches downfield over over defensive backs. So I think that that's an important thing for the Raiders. If he can't produce on offense, can be a steady option there. Gosh, it just makes them that more dangerous. I mean, they just have so many weapons.
Oakland Raiders insider for NBC Sports Bay Area. Follow him on Twitter at BearNBCS. It's Scott Bear with Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Scott, I hope you enjoyed your summer because the rest is gone. The NFL season is here, my friend. Look forward to doing it again with you soon.
Thank you, gentlemen. Anytime.
Scott Bear. All right. Now, we're going to talk with Jack Del Rio, the head coach, at 8:15 today, and we're going to follow that up with a conversation with Greg Papa at 8:30. In addition, we've got $1,000 to give away at the top of the hour, 8 o'clock. But up next, the latest development regarding LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, and it is a doozy. Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
We've got $1,000 to give away at the top of the hour for the 4K Day Cash Contest. And like you just heard, the head coach, Jack Del Rio, joining us at 8:15. Great to have you in today. The latest in the Kyrie Irving, LeBron James saga. We really thought coming off that NBA Finals that maybe, just maybe, we were going to be headed for a fourth installment, Warriors versus Cavs. After all, who in the East was going to challenge LeBron James? The Boston Celtics? A nice thought. How far did that series go? 5 games? Suddenly the Celtics, after losing in 5, are going to find a way to win in 7? I don't know. Maybe Gordon Hayward could do that. But it appears as if the Cavaliers have found a way to implode on their own. Friday, the report comes out that Kyrie Irving wants to be traded out of Cleveland. On Sunday, LeBron James, as he continues to set the stage for his own departure from Cleveland, but this time around, as a hero rather than a villain, makes it very clear he won't be waiving his no-trade clause. He's staying in Cleveland this year, people. Kyrie might want out, but LeBron's going to stay because it means that much to him. Then yesterday, Stephen A. Smith, on his radio show, had this to say.
Kyrie signed a 5-year deal in excess of $90 million right before LeBron returned to Cleveland, like a week or two before LeBron returned to Cleveland. Kyrie did not know that LeBron was coming back to Cleveland. So Kyrie was salty from that moment. Now, it doesn't mean that they had a contentious relationship. They've talked on many occasions. According to my sources, LeBron James has tried to appease him at every turn. A matter of fact, I had sources in LeBron James' camp literally tell me, and I'm quoting Charles, if Kyrie Irving was in front of LeBron James right now, LeBron James would be tempted, quote, to beat his ass, end quote.
So Batman finds out that Robin wants his own movie franchise and Batman doesn't like what he's hearing. In fact, he wants to beat Robin's ass. Lo Neal, from the beginning, you have thought this is all a big conspiracy that these two are working together. Does this report change any of that for you?
It's weird and people might call me crazy, but it doesn't. I think Stephen A is right in with the game with them. I mean, a lot of times guys say things to get things out there to start causing more confusion, but I think that Kyrie, Bale, and LeBron wants this trade to go down. It's just crazy to me. You're talking about how these two, how they fall from grace so quick. Every time you see the Cavs, you see Kyrie and LeBron hugging, even when defeat. Kyrie's waiting in the hallway, waiting in the hallway to hug and embrace LeBron here when they played the Dubs in Game 6. He's waiting in the hallway, 5, to hug him, to say, hey, we'll be back. And then after that, they both walk into the locker room together. Hell, 2 weeks ago, you hear Kyrie come out and say, I want to go wherever LeBron goes. I'll go with him, and I'll go play. And all of a sudden, this turn of events and change of heart, and now Stephen A's reporting it's all started because he didn't tell him when he was decided to come back, and he just got $90 million. What did that have to do with your money? You still got your $90 million. LeBron didn't come in and take any of the money. Spotlight, well, if you're trying to win championships, this is the best way to do it, is with LeBron. So I still think it's a joke, but if it's not, then I think that Kyrie's making a bad decision. I think him and LeBron are both making a bad decision because you're talking about who has the best opportunity to compete with the Dubs, not necessarily beat them, but compete with them. It was the Cavaliers with those two, because those are two dominant guys that can take over games. And I don't see where Kyrie can go and necessarily go get that type of support, especially in the East. I don't think that there's anyone in the East. Now, he can come over to the West if he wants to look at San Antonio, because San Antonio has a great, some good players there. He can look at some other teams. But I don't think in the East that he's going to get any closer by joining anyone there in the East.
Dibs, Kyrie Irving has made a ton of money. He's won an NBA championship. He's been to three straight finals, and he faces, and this is the key, literally no pressure. No pressure. All of it's on LeBron James. That's the beauty of playing with LeBron. Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, no pressure in Miami. All the pressure on LeBron. Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, no pressure. It's all on LeBron. Why would you want to step out from that?
Because you've already made your money, you've made generational wealth, you're 25 years old, and you don't want to be left holding the bag if LeBron James spends next year mulling over where he's going to go again, the decision part two. You have 2 years left in your deal. So if you play out this season and totally blind to what's going on with LeBron James, the end of the year comes. You probably don't get over on the Warriors. Apologies to the Jose Calderon move and Derrick Rose coming in as well. You're still not as good as Golden State. LeBron decides to leave and take his talents elsewhere. You're still under contract for one more year. What are you going to do? You're going to have to stick it out. They're not going to trade you then. If you come out as disgruntled now with 2 years left in your deal and you say, I don't want to play with LeBron anymore, and LeBron says what, according to Stephen A. Smith, he did say, so now the relationship's totally fractured. Kyrie can be traded anywhere. He doesn't have a no-trade clause. Go somewhere for two seasons, and at that point, he'll be in a position where he can pick his next destination and choose who he wants to play with.
If you want to be the star, and you know LeBron's leaving, why wouldn't you just stay in Cleveland? They drafted you. City already loves you. You've helped deliver a title. And when LeBron's gone, they're going to love you the way Oklahoma City loves Russell Westbrook. When KD left, that opened the door for Russell Westbrook to become the most beloved athlete in that area's history. Same thing would happen for Kyrie. He was there pre-LeBron. He'd be there through LeBron leaving the second time. So why wouldn't you just stay in Cleveland?
And I don't know why you wouldn't. And not just stay in Cleveland, Joe. If he goes anywhere in the East, and now, and if you look at what the Cavs have done, no. Did they go out and get some superstars? No. Did they get some washed-up superstars that could show some signs? Yeah. But if they stay healthy, where and who in the East still? If now LeBron's going to, if this is really the truth, now LeBron's going to play with that added incentive. He don't care if he's a seventh seed. They don't care if they're the last seed in the East. If he's healthy in that team that he has right now with Kyrie, not with Kyrie, but with Love and Shumpert and the guys that he has there, who in the East still, if he wants to turn it on to say, you know what, I'm going to burn this place down, I'm leaving, but I'm going to show him that I can still go to Eastern Conference. Fine, I'm still go to the NBA Finals. They can't beat the Dubs. But who's out there that you think is going to beat them still? If he decides, and if they stay healthy, will they still be the favorite? I would probably think so.
I got no beef whatsoever with a guy wanting to go out on his own, stake his own claim. That's what he thought he was going to have in Cleveland, and then LeBron came back. So I got no problem whatsoever if Irving's decided, you know what, I want to go out and do my own thing. I don't want to be in this guy's shadow. Totally understand the situation. But I'll tell you what right now, if he leaves, he will never have it better than he has it now. The rest of his career will never reach this point. Number one, where's he going to go that he gets to be the star, but also gets to be in serious contention? That place does not exist. You will not be in a better team environment with you being the star. You go to San Antonio, sorry, son, that's Kawhi Leonard's team. That ain't your team. And if you had a problem with LeBron, you're going to have a problem in San Antonio. This is the same thing that happened with James Harden. Harden was playing in OKC behind Durant and behind Westbrook, and he wanted to stake out on his own. Nothing against that. So he ends up in Houston. It's his team. Right up until who comes in? Dwight Howard. And what was the result there? A horrific season in which they had to run Dwight Howard out of town. Now, we know Dwight Howard's been run out of every place he's ever been because he's a malcontent and he's the classic underachiever. Number one overall, will never live up to the hype. But Harden, when he finally got it his own way, couldn't handle life with another superstar. What do you think is going to happen with Chris Paul there? Everyone just assumes those two are going to get along. Chris Paul is very difficult to play with. Everybody in Los Angeles, Griffin, Jordan, they've all said it. They all know it. You think Harden is suddenly going to get along with Chris Paul when he wanted out of a situation like that in OKC and couldn't handle it with Dwight Howard? And now you're talking about throwing Melo into the mix? Come on. Same thing with Irving. You can go somewhere where you're the star, but you will not compete in this version of the NBA, the juggernaut team version of the NBA. You will not compete if you're the focal point. So you can either shack up with two other superstars, in which point you're right back where you started, or you can control the show in Miami, for example, or in New York with the Knicks, and you won't go anywhere. Kyrie Irving's peaked. This is the greatest it will ever be, and once he's traded, he's never going to get back to this point ever again.
I don't necessarily believe that. I think that if he wants to stay and be the man in Cleveland, that's a dead end. If you go to Miami or New York, those are dead ends, but you can go somewhere. If you get traded and you have 2 years left in your deal, when that's finally over and you're a free agent, you're 27, then you can take a look at any other situation. And if you go to play with Kyrie in San Antonio, maybe it's more amenable to your style of play than playing with LeBron was. Who knows what the collection of stars will be in two seasons. I think if you're Kyrie, job number one is get out of Cleveland and not be left holding the bag when LeBron leaves at the end of this season.
But what's so bad about that? You're not taking any heat for that. None of that's on you. You're going to be loved.
Yeah.
If you're left holding the bag, you're left holding the bag where an entire city is going to embrace you. You don't have to enjoy Cleveland, but you're not going to be the fall guy. James is the fall guy. You don't take any of that heat. You do realize that right now he doesn't have to listen to his coach and he doesn't have to play defense. He's got no pressure and he's in the NBA Finals every year. Where's it going to get better than that? San Antonio, you're not getting past the Warriors, and Popovich is going to expect you to play defense. Plus, you're not even the star of that team, Kawhi Leonard is. Where else did he say he wanted to go? Minnesota? Okay, you're not getting past the Warriors. Thibodeau is going to expect you to play defense, and he is going to ride you hard during game 22 of the regular season, where in Cleveland you'd be able to take the night off under Tyronn Lue. Where are you going to go of his other four choices? The Knicks? What are you going to do in New York? You can be the toast of the town. You can be the star. You ain't contending. You're not going to beat anybody. So where else you want to go? Miami? Pat Riley is going to hold you accountable. Pat Riley is going to expect you to be the leader of that team and play both ways. You're not going to be able to take nights off. You are going to face pressure. You will not find a better situation than you have right now. Some could argue that Kyrie Irving's got the easiest gig in the NBA.
Well, he still is in Cleveland. If LeBron leaves at the end of next year and Kyrie stays, you find yourself, yeah, maybe getting a max deal, but you're in Cleveland playing for Dan Gilbert in life after LeBron. And to me, it'd be better to go somewhere else and fall short of a title aspiration than to sit there in post-LeBron Cleveland, because every time you fail in Cleveland, it's going to be, we should have never let LeBron go. We should have traded Kyrie. So I think to be in Cleveland after LeBron leaves would be a lot more harmful and a lot more pressure-packed than being in any of those other situations.
I just think that, like you said, Joe, I'm going through in my mind and trying to put him in great places where he's going to have the best opportunity. It's with LeBron. And no matter how you cut it and slice it and look at it, the reason why Steph Curry is able to do what he does, because can he dribble? Absolutely. But he's a guy that wants to get rid of the ball. He doesn't like necessarily taking over and doing like Kyrie. Kyrie is even more ball-dominant person than Steph. It works because Steph has other guys on that team, the Klay Thompson, the Draymond, and different guys that could step up and light it up just like him, and he has a good supporting cast, and now even KD. I've never seen, except with the exception of Iverson, a little man that can take over a game and be that dominant and didn't need necessarily any help around him. Steph couldn't be as dominant if he didn't have Draymond Green, he didn't have Klay Thompson, didn't have those shooters, didn't have, even though one MVP, that supporting cast and that system, the way the ball moves, help him because he's such a prolific shooter. Kyrie now is going to have to go build a team and understand that it's not a little man's necessarily game. What Steph's been able to do is unprecedented, but he has other guys around him that are dominant players. Kyrie it's going to be tough that you think, okay, I'm going to be MVP or I'm going to be this guy. It's hard because it's not necessarily predicated for a little man's game because he's not a prolific shooter like Steph. Steph won MVP back-to-back years because he can do something that no one in the history of this game is able to do. Dominate shooting the three ball from halfway outside the gym, doesn't matter. That's why the Flash, that's what Steph done, broke records. Kyrie can't go anywhere. It's not a little guy's point guard game for him to go and take over and be dominant and win championships.
People keep suggesting Boston. Let me tell you something about Boston. How are you going to be the star? Boston is a racist town. Who's the number one player in Boston history? Larry Bird. Some will say Bill Russell, but most would say Larry Bird. That's a racist town. If they're choosing between Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, who do you think the people of Boston are choosing? Plus, Hayward goes back 10 years with head coach Brad Stevens. You go to Boston, you're not the star. You're the point guard on the team that's run by Gordon Hayward. Fact. That's the situation. We're going to disappear for a minute, and then we've got $1,000 to give away, plus your calls. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Cleveland! This is for you!
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here! Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.